Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, December 3rd, welcome, friends, on Into the Show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
Tough topic alert. What happens when the people who raised you or the people you grew up with are the very people you feel you have no choice but to stay away from? Today, we're talking about family estrangement, because it feels like more Americans than ever are going no contact with their parents, siblings, or a family member, and recent data seems to back it up. A Cornell study finds 27% of adults are estranged from a family member, and Oprah Winfrey recently did a podcast on this very topic, and it lit up social media. It was all over my timeline. Everybody was talking about it. So today, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to explore whether there's been really a surge in people going no contact, and if so, what's driving it, how people actually decide to make that decision, what reconciliation could look like, and why some families never seem to find their way back to one another. We've got a psychologist who works with parents and children dealing with estrangement, and we also have someone who made the choice to break all ties with one of their parents. And we want to hear from you. This is going to be a very safe space for you today. Have you ever been estranged from family? Please share your story. Also, do you think it's becoming more acceptable or more normalized to cut ties? And is that a good or a bad thing? You can give us a call to join the conversation. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, share the video and leave your comments in the chat.
Yeah. And we say this from time to time, but some shows we really do need, you know, you to participate to make the show as good as possible and come to a greater understanding about the topic. We know it's a difficult topic, but if you have a personal anecdote to share, we'd love to hear from you. 888-477-9499. Again, you can email studio2@whyy.org. But yeah. First, our trio of local news stories. And we start with one that has a local tie, but was a big national story late yesterday. Quakertown-born pop star Sabrina Carpenter excoriated the Trump administration after the White House released a video that used one of her songs to seemingly promote the work of ICE. This video shows law enforcement making arrests, some of them very forceful. The Carpenter song playing underneath the compilation is called Juno. Let's watch and hear a clip. So when Carpenter performs this song live, she often makes fake arrests with novelty handcuffs, and that's the reference that the White House is playing off of in the video. Carpenter, however, was very much not amused. In a reply to the video on X, she wrote, "Do not ever involve me or my music to benefit your inhumane agenda."
IP lawyer hat on for a moment. Under U.S. copyright law, artists have the right to choose how their music is used, including whether it's used in political campaigns. Artists, they have control over who gets a license, who can perform it, broadcast it, etc. And clearly, the White House did not ask Sabrina Carpenter whether she wanted her song linked to ICE or to his administration. So she publicly objected. I will say that folks typically don't sue for this type of thing because it's expensive and time consuming. And a lot of times the only recourse you have is to go onto the social media platform and file a complaint and hope they take it down. But artists these days, that's basically, you know, there's numerous artists who've been objecting to their use of their music by the White House. But the only recourse they really have is to speak out like Sabrina Carpenter did.
Yeah, and it goes back to even when Trump was campaigning, there were conflicts over songs. Celine Dion, Bruce Springsteen, Beyonce, more recently Olivia Rodrigo had a very similar, where like her music was used in a promotional video promoting some of the work of the administration, and she replied on social media. Sometimes I wonder if actually the White House is courting these conflicts. They actually
like it,
They like the sort of the back and forth with the pop stars because part of their political brand, or they think their political brand is sort of us versus the stars versus the elite, whatever. I'm not sure it's a great political calculation, but sometimes I do wonder if they in fact want, they're luring artists into these types of conflicts.
And they don't really take the videos down once they complain. They sometimes have cheeky responses. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. Cheeky's a kind word.
Yeah.
Story number two.
Yeah. Traffic safety concerns recently came to a head after a 65-year-old man driving on one of Northwest Philly's twisty-turny roads lost control of his vehicle and ended up in a creek. He unfortunately passed away. The man struck a guardrail on Cresham Valley Drive. His car flipped over. That very guardrail that he struck had already been damaged from a previous accident. That driver survived. Cresham Valley Drive in Chestnut Hill, Lincoln Drive, their roads, they're lined with trees. If you're not from Philly, this area is very curvy. It tends to flood when it rains. It's very slippery. And people tend to speed on these windy roads, and it's caused it to be plagued by accidents, sometimes fatal ones over the years. Five people died along this stretch of road since 2019. And in 2018, there were 16 crashes along one of the most dangerous stretches of that road. The most ever recorded. So PennDOT and the streets department, they've been working quite a bit to calm traffic, especially along Lincoln Drive. They've installed rumble strips, which are like speed bumps, as well as speed tables. And they've been doing a lot of work. And there's been a lot of focus in Philadelphia generally on making the streets and the roads safer. But this has really come up yet again, because every time you turn around, it seems like at least once a year, somebody sort of ends up in a creek, ends up in the Delaware River, driving along these twisty-turny roads.
Yeah, and I think that particular road is illustrative of a larger problem with traffic safety. If you've driven along Lincoln Drive, as many people have in our region, you know that the speed limit, the posted speed limit, is pretty low. It's 25 miles an hour.
They don't observe it,
And people don't observe it. And it's not because people are suddenly become different types of drivers when they're on this one road. I think it goes to street design. Like, the, you could say that the speed limit is 25 on Broad Street or Lincoln. But if the road is designed in a way that kind of encourages people to drive faster or allows them to drive faster, then they will drive faster. And so that's why the city has started to do some work. Obviously, neighbors think it's not enough, but try to do some work to change the design of the road. Road design is so important in these conversations, in addition to speed limits and enforcement.
Yeah, and we saw that on Roosevelt Boulevard, which used to be one of the deadliest roads. They put in those speed cameras. 95% compliance now with speed. They're doing it on Broad Street right now. I don't know if you've gotten a ticket. I haven't, thank goodness. But they're ticketing people. So we'll see what they do along that curvy stretch of road.
Yeah, and shout out, Henry Savage from The Inquirer wrote an interesting story about this crash and this broader issue. So it's worth checking out.
Yep.
Final story. A South Jersey teenager is looking for a long lost punk rock demo tape that her mom made 30 years ago. And her quest for this lost tape has galvanized folks on the internet. NJ.com has a lovely story on this mother-daughter pair. The teenager is 16-year-old Charlotte Astor of Camden County.
She's cute.
She's cute. Her mom, Shannon, was the lead singer of a short-lived hardcore band called Seed when Shannon was just 14 years old. Seed cut a single demo in 1994 at a studio in the Pine Barrens. They gave away or sold every single copy of the demo, and now Charlotte, who is now herself really into punk rock, really wants to track down her mom's long-lost demo tape to hear what her mom sounded like as a
back
hardcore, raging, bad bleep mom in the 1990s. So, folks, if you know about this demo tape by a band called Seed in South Jersey in the 90s, we need to hear from you. People all over the internet have now been looking for this Seed demo tape.
I know. Check the basement. Check the attic. Check the garage. Because if you grew up in the 90s, you probably have a box of old cassette tapes that's probably dusty. Crack that sucker open if you grew up in South Jersey and just to see if you have it. And also, like, bring up some old memories.
Yeah.
But I love this story because Charlotte has been hearing the stories about her mom being this punk rocker since she was 5 years old, and then sort of walked into the footsteps of her mom. And her mom says that she's an even better artist than she could have ever been.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I wasn't into punk rock back in the day.
Oh, you weren't?
I wasn't, but
DC area, big area for punk rock.
Yeah, I was listening to Go-Go. Okay. But I will say this, if I was, I would definitely be looking through my cassette tapes right now, trying to help Charlotte out.
The fact that the band is called Seed and this is about like a mom-daughter relationship is just so
it's
perfect.
Just
the metaphor is amazing. But it also reminds you, like, this type of story is not going to really be able to happen much in the future because people have preserved everything they ever did digitally.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, something from the 90s. This is back when you could truly lose something like that and maybe never find it again. And the odds of them finding this demo tape are pretty slim.
She wants to hear her mom rock out. And they had T-shirts and everything. She has nothing from those days, the Seed days. Ugh.
Oh. Took me years to get those souvenirs, and I don't know how they slipped away from me. We are going to talk about families, but in a very different sense coming up. We're talking about family estrangement. We'd love to hear your stories. Give us a call or an email. We'll be right back on Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Though data on this topic is scarce, there is an anecdotal sense that family estrangement is becoming more common. Or at the very least, that it's becoming less taboo. On social media platforms, influencers rack up millions of views talking about estrangement, often encouraging people to cut off toxic relatives.
Today on the show, we explore that phenomenon and family estrangement more broadly. When is it healthy to cut ties with a parent or sibling? When is it not? And how has the social climate around estrangement changed?
We've got two great guests with us to guide this fraught conversation. Joshua Coleman is a psychologist and senior fellow at the Council on Contemporary Families. He's also author of Rules of Estrangement. Joshua, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Harriet Brown, author of Shadow Daughter, a memoir of estrangement. Harriet, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Cherry.
And we know this is a tough topic, but we would really love to hear from you. Have you been estranged from a family member? Share your story with us. Do you think it's becoming more acceptable? And is that a good or bad thing? Our number is 888-477-9499. I see a couple of you with stories already on the line. Please stay on the line because we're going to get to you. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
Andrea wrote on Facebook, "We are in an age and time when it's easier for folks to choose silence instead of vulnerability and communication." And so, Joshua, I wanted to start with you because, you know, people have been cutting ties with families for generations and generations. This is not something new. But to me, it feels like more and more people are willing to do that. Is that true? And if so, what has changed?
Well, I certainly think that it's true. You know, the research on this is fairly new, so we don't really have the beginning point to track it in the way that we do other data, say, you know, hospitalizations for suicidal ideation or that kind of thing. But if we just look at divorce, we know from the research that divorce is a big cause of estrangement for a variety of reasons. And so that alone has caused and enabled an enormous amount of estrangements. We have rising rates of individualism, which means that people are much more concerned and preoccupied with their own happiness and mental health and identity. We have the invasion, intrusion of therapeutic narratives is the way that we think about our lives. And thinking about our lives in a much more psychological way means that we're thinking about our childhoods. The sociologist Eva Illouz says, today our lives are plotted backwards. What's a dysfunctional family? It's a family where your needs weren't met. How do you know your needs weren't met? By looking at your present condition. So you have a lot of people coming into therapy or getting onto Instagram or TikTok or whatever, and they're thinking, gee, I feel depressed, I feel anxious, I feel lonely, I have attachment issues. And they're being invited by the larger culture to look at their families as the primary agent or cause of those issues. And certainly, I mean, I'm a psychologist, I look at that for sure. But what gets left on the table is culture, genetics, social peer group, cohort. So for example, by cohort, the generation that you're born into, we know that Gen Z, those born between roughly 1995 and 2012, have more than any other generation record high rates of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, suicide. So all of those things. And then on top of that, the social amplification through social media are all really infecting the culture. So yes, I absolutely think it's on the rise for those reasons.
When you say infecting, I mean, I could see pros and cons in the list of things that you laid out there, Joshua. So what do you see as sort of some of the positive attributes of this trend? And what do you see as some of the negative attributes?
Right. No, you're right. If there's a good news, bad news here. The good news is that people have the social authority to complain or to even litigate the ways that they were treated, how they felt abused, neglected, traumatized, harmed, et cetera, by their parents or other people. And that is a good thing. You know, other generations and other cultures were kind of denied that opportunity. And excuse me, some family members are truly destructive and bad for our well-being, and sometimes we're left no other choice than to end the relationship with them. So that is the upside to this.
Yeah, and Harriet, we want to bring you into the conversation. And for the folks on the line, please hold on, because we're going to get to you in just a moment. But Harriet, we want to invite you into the conversation because, you know, estrangement is a thing. Many times it's an option of last resort for a lot of folks. So I want you to sort of explain your situation and why you made that choice.
Well, like many, like pretty much everyone I talk to who's ever gone through this, and I've talked to several hundred people at this point for the book I wrote and also just in the world. It is, in fact, something that we do as a last resort. Everyone I've ever talked to and myself spent years, decades, trying to find any other way to sort of have a relationship with their toxic family members. It's, you know, I'm very sympathetic to the idea that, yes, social media can be a big driver of things. It can influence people. But in this case, I think people who estrange themselves, there's so many factors that go into pushing you not to do that, right? There's the culture, there's a lot of judgment that people still have. There's, you know, everything around us, media sort of forwards this narrative of happy families or at least happy enough families. And it takes quite a lot to sort of inspire people, to allow people to go against that. It really takes feeling like, oh my God, I have no choice. In my case, again, like in the cases of many people, it came down to feeling like if I did not do this, I might actually die. I might die metaphorically. I was so miserable, so anxious, so unhappy for so many years. I'd tried everything. Nothing ever worked. And for me, it was an incredibly liberating thing. Yeah. It wasn't a happy thing. It wasn't something I would blithely recommend to people. And, you know, it was still incredibly difficult. And my mother, who was the person I estranged from, has died 13 years ago. And it's still something I think about, but I don't regret one second of it, because I think it saved my life and the life of my family, my husband, my children.
Yeah, we're going to hear some personal testimonies in a moment from others, but I just want to have you give folks some background, because you just described like a last straw moment or interaction with your mother. And I know you can't get into the whole backstory, but a condensed version of that story, the sort of moment where you realize we can't even talk anymore, because it's not going to be healthy for me or the rest of my family. That anecdote, if you don't mind sharing, Harriet.
Yeah, and it came after months, years of, you know, back and forth trying to navigate, you know, then silences. And it came in the form of an email exchange that we had where, you know, my older daughter was very, very sick with anorexia, actually, almost died. And it was a time of great stress in the family. And my mother kept emailing me to say, I would like to help you. I would like to support you. And I thought, well, that's great. She's reaching out. She wants to be helpful and supportive. You know, let me come up with a way to bring her into this conversation, bring her into what we're going through emotionally. So I said, you know what, Mom, it would be great if you could like help me research high calorie recipes. I really need more of those to add to the rotation. I didn't really need that. But again, I thought it was lovely that she wanted to be supportive.
That was your olive branch, essentially, was like, this is a way you could help.
Right. And I was hopeful. And immediately, within an hour, I got back an email from her, a long email saying, There's a lot of things I've wanted to say to you for a long time. Isn't it ironic that your daughter, hates her body, and this is an issue that you
Oh,
write about as a
goodness.
journalist? You're very formidable. You're very overbearing. I don't think it's a coincidence. Basically, just like blaming me for what was happening with my daughter. And I was sitting in my chair in front of my desk reading this email, and I literally heard something break. I heard this breaking sound. And that was it for me. That was the last straw. At that point, I realized there was nothing. It wasn't about the past. It wasn't about old grudges I was hanging on to. It was about what she was doing right in that moment. And then I couldn't have her in my life anymore. And that was it.
You say now upon reflection, and your mother's now been gone for many years, but on reflection, you don't regret the decision. But were there moments afterward that were very, very difficult? Maybe it was a moment you just like
Wondered,
wanted to
yeah.
send her an email about a random thing, or there was a holiday. Like, were there moments of difficulty afterwards that you remember, or did you feel like there was just forward momentum after that, and it wasn't as too much, looking back on your part, or even regret in the moment?
That's a great question. What there were moments, and I still have these moments where I feel like I really wish I had had a mother who loved me for who I was. I really, really wish that. That I regret. My only regret about estranging from my mother is that I didn't do it 20 years earlier, honestly.
And so we're going to bring in a caller now to the conversation. We have Lisa from Newtown on the line. Lisa, you're on Studio 2. We'd love to hear your story.
So we had a close, we had someone that came to live with us when I was quite young. My father kept in contact with her. I referred to her as my sister frequently. And one day my dad came home and said that they were getting married. No warning, no nothing. That was hard. I can't even describe that. It was easier for me to tell people that he died than to tell them what really happened because they didn't understand the pain that that caused me. So I cut him out for several years. The only reason I started talking to him again was when my grandfather was getting sick and we needed to deal with that. And then the kicker is that I now have a sister who's 8 months older than my daughter. And I don't think it's fair for either of them to not have each other because of what my father and I have. So I keep in touch with him for that. And I do want to be clear that I love my father a lot and I miss him tremendously. But some decisions that he made just can't be undone, I guess.
Yeah,
Well,
thank
thank you
you.
so much for
That's
sharing
Lisa
that,
from
Lisa.
Newtown.
Just and to everyone who's been offering their story, just want to thank you in advance. I know it's difficult to talk about, but I think, one thing that Lisa's story brings up, Joshua, is the idea of a single transgression that is sort of so galling that it's really just difficult to look past. I'm curious how often that comes up in the work that you do, because I could see it, being as common or less common than just sort of like a build up and a sort of, straw that broke the camel's back pattern. Like, how often do you see like one really sort of
Egregious thing.
unforgivable sin versus like the build up and the pattern?
Well, I think that some things are hard for the adult child to kind of forgive or make sense out of, and it can really turn the relationship on its head. And fathers in particular are very vulnerable to an estrangement after a divorce and after they remarry, particularly in gray divorces when parents are over the age of 50 or 60. One study found that something like 26% of fathers are currently estranged from a child. So I think that it certainly can happen, and that might be an example of something. But I think it also highlights that I'm often asked by journalists, well, at what point is it, should somebody estrange themselves? And I'm always willing to answer that question, but I think we also have to think about it from the perspective that estrangements are a cataclysmic event in a family system. Is it typically just the parent and the adult child that's being cut off? Siblings, some line up in support of the parent, others line up in support of the siblings. grandparents typically get cut off of contact with their grandchildren when there's an estrangement, which can be a tragedy both for the grandparents and the grandchildren. So my mission is to really encourage us as a society to sort of look at the big picture here, not just look at ourselves as kind of individuals. Is this good for me? Is this bad for me? But how is it going to affect everybody around us? And if I may, I want to circle back to, can I just say one more thing?
Yep. Sure.
and that is when your comment, Harriet, about it being the option of last resort. It's not just toxic, destructive parents who are getting cut off. Many loving, decent parents are getting cut off today, not because they're abusive, but because their child might have married somebody who said, choose them or choose me, you can't have both. Maybe it's because the parent was mentally ill. Could also be because the adult child is mentally ill. Maybe it's because the adult child has gotten into therapy with a therapist who assumes that every problem in adulthood stems from a traumatic childhood. So sometimes it's because the adult child doesn't know any other way to feel separate. So I really want us to kind of destroy this myth that it's only destructive, terrible, abusive parents who are getting estranged today, because it's not the case. And you're right, Harriet, plenty are, and I'm really sorry for what you had to go through with your mom, but not every estranged parent deserves, is getting what they deserve.
Yeah, and I wanted to sort of circle back to a little bit of what our caller had to say, because one of the things she mentioned was that her daughter, she didn't want to fully cut off everything because she didn't want to rob her daughter of that relationship. I mean, it feels like there's degrees to this, because no contact is totally different from lower contact. Are there degrees to estrangement and sort of how do you sort of decide which degree it should be? Because it seems like totally we never speak forever seems to be the option of last resort.
I 100% agree with that. And my wish for every estranged adult child on the call is that, I get going no contact 6 months, maybe a year, but to permanently decide to do that, I mean, you're kind of freezing the relationship in time, and you're not really giving that parent the opportunity to learn or to grow or to change. And also, I work every single day with sobbing fathers and mothers and grandfathers and grandmothers whose lives have been ruined by their child cutting them off. And look, I'm not here to say that parents don't make mistakes. I mean, my message to parents is y'all have to do the work. You have to really do a deep dive of empathy and responsibility taking. And I tell every single estranged parent, you have to start by saying, I know you wouldn't do this unless you felt like it was the healthiest thing for you to do, because that's how it feels to your child. So you can't defend, you can't explain, you can't blame. You have to find the kernel, if not the bushel of truth, in your child's complaints. But on the adult child side, I really would like to see more of an attitude that, okay, I may need to do this for a while. I may need to send a shot across the bow to let my parent know that they really need to change. But I'm going to look back at it. I'm going to come back in a year or so and say, well, did you do therapy? Are you willing to do family therapy? Have you thought more deeply about the things that you do that really are deeply hurtful or shameful or humiliating or frightening to me? Because if you're not, I'm going to go back out for another 6 months to a year.
Harriet, you wanted to respond there. Go ahead.
I did. I mean, I think, Joshua, if you had talked to my mother during our estrangement, you probably would have felt, oh my gosh, here's this wonderful, warm person. She's crying. She doesn't know what has happened. She would have said to you, I have no idea why my daughter has estranged me, even though I had told her 10,000 times in 10,000 ways. Yeah. So I guess my point is, you cannot know from the outside what is actually happening in a relationship. You cannot know what the dynamics are or how people are feeling. In reporting for my book, Shadow Daughter, I talked with several hundred people who had been through estrangement. And I'm not saying that this is the only thing, right? I am in no way saying all parents who are estranged are terrible, evil, or ill people. Not saying that. There's a range of things that happen. But I have never personally met an adult child who made that choice without intense, many efforts in so many different ways. giving parents chance after chance after chance. Some people are not capable of growth or change, or, perhaps their early experiences in their lives. This is probably what I think happened with my mother. She had a rough childhood. I feel great compassion for her, and I think it made it impossible for her to change. But nevertheless, right? That is still, and I think that great damage is done sometimes by people trying over and over and over again and being hurt in the same ways over and over and over again. So I would respectfully disagree that, permanent no contact is always a bad thing. I don't think that's true.
Let's
Well, bring in another.
we just want to keep another call, and I know we have to, we're going to get back to that conversation. And I want to put a pin in this, sort of like the idea that further damage could be done by sort of prolonging the process. So we'll get back to that, but we do have a lot of people waiting on the line. This is Anthony from Mount Laurel on the line. Hey, Anthony, you're on Studio 2. Would love to hear your insight and your testimony.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just listened to one of your guests mention something about a estranged parent not being deserving of the estrangement. And my daughter is 36 years old, and we have never really had a relationship. She's been negatively influenced by her mother, her grandmother, her aunt, and her great grandmother, four women in her life. And it's left a hole in my heart that just can't be filled. And it's such a hurting thing that every time we talk, and the thing that really gets me is she's never said what I've done to her, if there's any such thing. And it's such a hurting thing. And I've just decided that I've had enough, and I let it go. The last time that we talked, I reached out to her and nothing back. And we were had a relationship on and off, on and off. But every time it just seems like she just blames me for something that I have no clue what it could be. I've always been there, always been a terrific father as far as I'm concerned. So I just what it is.
Yeah, thank you
You're at a
so much.
loss.
That's Anthony from Mount Laurel. And so, Joshua, I wonder, like, people, when you're on the receiving end of this, Harriet clearly told her mother what it was. Whether she accepted that or not, that's one thing. But you hear from this father, and you said fathers are more likely to have that estrangement. And folks just, you are on the receiving end of this estrangement. You have no idea. How common is that for there to have been no discussion? And what do you do if you're just trying to figure out how it got to this point?
Yeah, it's a really important question and several thoughts about it. Well, one of the things Anthony is describing, which is not uncommon, is parental alienation, where after a divorce or separation, one parent poisons the child against the other parent. It's a real thing, and it has lasting consequences. So I believe him when he says that. But sometimes our children tell us things that we're doing that really are bothering us, and we just can't believe that it's bothering them as much as it is, and so we sort of ignore it. Because I have worked with adult children or even seen letters from them where they're clearly telling the parent
What it is.
what they did, and the parents go, "Well, that's not it." And part of the issue is that, there was a study in 2016 that showed that in the past 3 or 4 decades, we've enormously expanded what we consider to be traumatizing, harmful, abusive, neglectful behavior. And so what often happens is there's this generational gap where younger generations are coming to their parents and saying, "Look, you emotionally abused me, or you neglected me, or you traumatized me, or you harmed me." And the parent who grew up in a totally different generation of like, "No, I didn't. What are you talking about?" And there's never any meeting of the minds. So that's why I always tell parents, look, you have to look at it from your child's perspective. And if you don't know, or if it doesn't make sense to you, you still have to take responsibility for that. So what I tell parents, like in your case, Anthony, would be to say something like, "It's clear I have significant blind spots, that I don't have a better understanding of why you need to do this. I know you wouldn't be doing it unless you felt like it was the healthiest thing for you to do. Would you feel comfortable writing me and telling me more about what it is? Would you be willing to do some family therapy with me so I can get some help in empathizing better or communicating better? Or is there things you want me to work on in my own therapy?"
And I promise we get back to this. We will now on the other side of this break. This idea of if there can be further damage done by trying to continually repair, and when you should stop trying to repair. And I know we got a lot of folks and a lot of comments. We're going to try to get you guys in. So
A lot of
keep those
comments.
emails and calls coming. Studio2@whyy.org. The number is 888-477-9499. We'll be right back on Studio 2 from WHYY. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about family estrangement this hour, which appears to be on the rise. But how do you know if no contact is the right thing to do? Our guest is Joshua Coleman. He's a psychologist in private practice and a senior fellow at the Council on Contemporary Families. He's also the author of Rules of Estrangement. We also have Harriet Brown, author of Shadow Daughter, a memoir of estrangement.
We'd love to hear your stories and your thoughts on estrangement. Have you been estranged from a family member? Do you think it's becoming more socially acceptable? And is that a good or a bad thing? Maybe a little bit of both. Call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. Wanted to read this quick comment from Anonymous, who said, one aspect of estrangement that is seldom discussed is what it's like to be caught in the middle of an estranged family member situation. I am the middleman in two estrangements in my family. The situation is complicated by the presence of an aging parent and a nephew, both of whom deserve the attention of all family members, but don't get it because of the deep animosities. Wow. That goes to this bigger question we were talking about, Joshua, which is there is collateral damage in this. We all understand. And there is, I think you can make the argument in either direction. Like, you want to continue to try to repair the relationship so that you can, you know, mitigate that damage. Or you can mitigate that damage by saying, look, this is over. We all put it in the past and we move on with our new family structure. I do think it's genuinely difficult to determine which way you should point your arrow when you're in the middle of one of these situations, as that anonymous emailer is. What advice can you give?
Well, I mean, if it's you're the person who's considering cutting off the parent in particular, I just want to make sure that you've really taken the time to, you know, let them know very specifically what it is that bothers you about them, and that you do it in a way that they can hear. You know, the marital researcher John Gottman said conversations end the way that they begin. And I see a lot of estranged adult children writing their parents and saying, well, I learned in therapy that you're emotionally immature, you're a narcissist or whatever, and you're never gonna get a good productive response from your parent. It's better to start with saying what you like or value or appreciate about them, and then let them know the things that they do that are really hurtful or even damaging to you, and give them plenty of runway and saying, look, if this continues, I just don't see how I can be in a relationship with you, and then, you know, be willing to revisit it in 6 months or a year later. But, you know, often the work that we have to do to work with family members is internal work. Sometimes we're just we haven't really gotten resilient enough to be able to tolerate the way that family or anybody else in our lives are difficult. And that's why I think this is kind of a problem in our culture, in society that we're always talking about, you know, who's a narcissist, who's a gaslighter, who do we need to set our boundaries with? And we're not really being coached to talk about, well, how do you resolve conflict? How do you have difficult conversations? You know, what are you bringing to the table? How are you making it difficult for the person to give you what it is that you want them to give to you?
Yeah. Let's bring in another caller. We have Marie from Abington on the line. Marie, you're on Studio 2. What is your story?
My story is that I'm estranged from my mother after, who was a very abusive mother, emotionally, verbally, physically, and I left shortly after my 18th birthday. I think both your guests make great points. I'm also a therapist, a clinical social worker and a therapist. Came to therapy later in my career, have had years of therapy myself. I think both your guests have made great points, but it's like Harriet is speaking my life. I like to hug her, and her book is already in my reading list. So this is not, like she said, it's a healthy decision, not a happy one. There's a lot of fallout within the family, and it's very hard to go all contact. I opt to see my mother. By the way, he was the gatekeeper for my dad when he was sick with a very long chronic illness. So after he died, it was easier to go with the no contact, because otherwise I would have had no contact with my father. And I am now an older adult. My mother is over 80. She's not going to change. She has mental illness. And but there's mental illness that's treatable and you have some compassion. There's also mental illness, like some personality disorders are super destructive and harmful to the people around them. And we have a large family. So what I've opted to do is in family events, if I did a total no contact, I wouldn't be able to go to any family event. Yeah. So I go. Sometimes I take an Ativan beforehand.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling, they're always stressful for me to get ready to go.
Well, thank you. Just going to show, there's a lot of gray area between this binary of no contact and, you know, sort and of
semi-contact or some or low contact. And so, Harriet, I have a question for you because I wonder how you navigate this as someone who decided to go no contact. What do you tell your kids? You know, you had children. There's their grandmother they're not seeing. How do you sort of navigate the relationships with other family members who you may actually want to talk to? Do you cut them off too? Like, just kind of give us some deets on how you navigate all of that stuff as you try to hold up the no contact with just your mom.
It's very complicated, as people have said, and you know, it's we talk about a spectrum of estrangement. And for most of my life, I was on the spectrum with my mother, right? Kind of like our caller. I would go to family events, you know, just try to avoid any kind of conflict. I facilitated my daughter's having a relationship with her, but because of her, perhaps personality disorder, I really don't know. She basically screwed the pooch with both of them. You know, I sent my younger daughter down to Florida for a weekend with my parents when she was 12. And within an hour, she was on the phone with me crying hysterically. I need to come back. I can't be here with this person. So I did everything I could to facilitate that. My mother, like our caller, was the gatekeeper for my father, you know, so I didn't have a relationship with him either. Not by my choice, but that was the choice that he made and that they made together. So, yeah, it's really, really complicated. At the end of the day, I think when you've got someone who's so toxic and so unable to listen or grow or learn, you know, I became the person in the family who was willing to say all that. Everyone knew it. But I was willing to say it. I was willing to draw the line. And I think that it did cost me relationships in the family. And that I am sad about, but still no regrets. But families are systems and it's very complicated. And I do feel bad for, I feel compassion for everyone on all sides of this. But I think sometimes you have to do what you have to do to protect yourself.
Yeah. We've been talking, look, family is a universal concept and these types of strained relationships exist in all cultures. But we've been talking about how much of this could be informed by culture. And some of our commenters are wondering about that as well. Akram says, I'm an Arab immigrant who grew up in the Middle East. The notion of family estrangement, according to him, is nearly unheard of in Arab culture. Much of that comes down to the societal structure itself. American culture is focused on optimizing individual success. Arab culture is much more collectivist in its approach. That's Akram's perspective. Now I want to bring in Evelyn from Lansdowne Online, too, who I think has a perspective also from this lens. Evelyn, you're on Studio 2. What's your insight that you can share with us this hour?
Yeah, I am an immigrant. I moved to this country when I was 4 years old, and so certainly been straddling the cultural divide. And my dad was very adamant, you know, reminding me of my Hispanic heritage and roots. And I am now pregnant and am coming face to face with, you know, what are the relationships that I want to keep and which ones do I not? And I feel so much guilt around the conflict of my Hispanic values and what I need to do, you know, just to protect myself and my family. My partner, who is also a licensed therapist, says, you know, I might just be at the point of radical acceptance. And I think that that just continues to resonate, that this concept of estrangement is just non-existent within the context of Hispanic values. And I'm excited that, you know, we're having these conversations. But I would be curious to see how these conversations play out within the cultural context, especially one, you know, similar to the email that was just read.
Thank you, Evelyn.
You know, collective cultures, you know?
It's an important question.
Yeah.
And I guess, Joshua, I'll ask you if that comes up in your work. First of all, family estrangement perhaps being sort of, I don't want to say started, but one of the galvanizers of the estrangement being some sort of cultural conflict, and then how you try to navigate that with folks that you talk to. to see, like, is that at the core of the issue? Is it sort of ancillary to the estrangement? Because I feel like it might be difficult to figure that out from time to time.
Shoot, I lost.
Oh, I think we lost Joshua.
Yeah, we lost Joshua for a second.
Yeah. Well, we can keep coming with more callers because we have a lot of folks lined up.
Bill from Downingtown is on the line. Bill, you're on Studio 2. I'd love to hear your
story. Sorry, my internet is very unstable right now, so I'm just...
Well, we're gonna get it patched up, Joshua, if you don't mind for a second, and we're gonna bring in another caller while we try to work on your issues. Yeah. So, Bill from Downingtown, you are on Studio 2. Would love to hear your insights and your story.
Thank you. So, I'm calling about my brother, who is a ordained Catholic deacon, and he married a woman with a 5-year-old child and adopted and raised her. And about 4 years ago, she confronted her mom and my brother, her stepdad, along with her 3 siblings that she had been emotionally abused growing up. And my brother said, you know, please leave. And my brother was very, very distraught. Over the last month, this daughter, my niece, reached out to her mother and asked if she could come for Thanksgiving, and she did, and reached out to her siblings via text and never really apologized to my brother. And my brother is obviously now in conflict with his wife for accepting 2 days before that her daughter, her blood daughter, was returning. And although, you know, a unsettled situation, you rejoice that somebody's returned as a prodigal, as my brother, you know, has been praying for, but he is still very hurt and he's unwilling to go to counseling. But as I sat, I joined the conversation listening, I heard one of the counselors say, you know, although you may not go to counseling, you know, have the person that's been grieved write a letter. So, you know, it's a sticky situation, yeah. You know, and we're just trying to pray for, you know, forgiveness and reconciliation. But it's still now turned a prodigal daughter's returned. And now you have a marital conflict that is in deep stuff now as well.
Thank you. That's Bill from Downingtown. And Joshua, I'm sure you heard this commentary, but this is sort of the interpersonal relationships that can be damaged because of estrangement. You have a mother who wants her daughter back. You have a father that felt disrespected, never got the apology. How do you sort of navigate that? Because a lot of times when you have a mom and dad, the women are more likely to want to work things out. How do you sort of counsel people through that and build up conflict resolution so that if one of the two in the couple want it back, you can sort of try to get to a place of compromise?
Yeah, it's really a common gender difference that moms are basically, in general, not all moms, but in general, mothers are willing to kind of walk over hot coals towards a reconciliation, and dads, you know, aren't typically as willing to do it. And it's kind of tied in with men's ideas of authority and masculinity and the idea that, you know, the child has to earn their way back in, which I think is a mistake. From my reckoning, it's incumbent on the parent to do the work towards reconciliation, to make amends, to be the bridge back into the family, to understand if this child, I couldn't hear all of the question because of a Wi-Fi issue, but if the child was accusing the parent of being emotionally abusive, to understand why the child is saying that. But it does become a couple's issue, and it can divide couples. And I think that it should, in that case, it can break up a marriage or can certainly worsen it. So I think that couples should get into therapy at that point, you know, because of the kind of cost it can have on the marriage.
I want to bring in another caller as we get ready to wrap up. Yvonne from Brewery Town's been on the line for a while. Yvonne, you're on Studio 2. What would you like to add to the conversation in maybe just a minute or less?
Sure. I'm actually in the process right now, still trying to deal with my mother. She also had a tough childhood. She grew up in Rotterdam during the war. And she's just really not a very happy person. She can be very bitter, and it's difficult to try to make it a nice situation with her. It's just always really challenging, and I don't want to, you know, estrange myself from her, but I just don't know where to go to try to make it better.
And maybe we can get some advice.
It's hard.
Thank you so much for that, and that just that open, honest, and raw question. And I loved at the beginning of that call, Yvonne saying, like, I kind of understand, or I think I understand where this is coming from. You grew up in a war.
And it was hard.
And it was hard.
Yeah.
But still, I don't really know what to do. We are closing now, Joshua and Harriet, but I don't know how you would both try to counsel that situation. I'll start with you, Harriet, and then Joshua real quick.
It seems to me that Yvonne is where she needs to be, you know, which is feeling empathy for her mother, but struggling with the actual interactions. And my guess is, Yvonne, that you're already doing what you need to do, and that it's a question of just accepting the feelings, that it's never going to feel wonderful or easy, but that it's your mother.
Yeah, we have about 15, 20 seconds, Joshua, real quick.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you just said, Harriet. And, you know, sometimes the most therapeutic thing is to grieve that we don't have the parents that we have, because they probably didn't have the parents that they had.
Yeah.
And I think that can be can make us feel more compassionate for them and do some of the hard work towards reconciliation.
That was Joshua Coleman, psychologist and senior fellow with the Council on Contemporary Families and author of Rules of Estrangement. Thank you so much for your time today, Joshua.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you, Harriet Brown, author of Shadow Daughter, A Memoir of Estrangement. Harriet, it was wonderful to have you on Studio 2 as well.
Thank you so much, Avi and Cherry.
Yes, and shout out to Jessica from Philadelphia. So sorry we did not get to your call today. Thank you to everybody who emailed in and called in. You helped make this show, I think, powerful. Thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I want to reiterate that thank you. Thank you so much to our callers and commentators. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett. We'll talk to you tomorrow.